You're listening to Connecting Faith, and today we're going to get some practical approaches and lessons on how we can more effectively share our faith with friends and neighbors who may be skeptical, and no doubt we meet those more and more all the time. You know, how do we move from maybe thinking about sharing our faith to actually engaging? And Rick Mattson has helped us along the way over a number of weeks as we've gotten together. He's an apologetics specialist for University Christian Fellowship. He's served as a staff worker for, you know, about 30-plus years now. He's author of Faith is Like Skydiving and other memorable images for dialogue with seekers and skeptics. Frequently speaks in college and university campuses across the country. He serves at Hamline University in Minnesota. And Rick, we want to talk today a little bit about some important questions that you encounter, and then maybe we've encountered as well. But maybe one of the first ones is in light of whether it's hurricanes or terrible tragedies like shootings or protests in Charlottesville or wherever it might be. People wonder, you know, why all the suffering? Is life simply just random and anybody? It's just the wrong place at the wrong times?
Yeah, it's a broken world that we live in. And Christians would say that that's a result of the fall. Genesis 3 describes a time when Adam and Eve, our first parents, were in close communion and relationship with God, and then they decided to turn their backs on God, and the whole world fell into disarray. It's a broken world. I think the first thing we want to say, though, in light of hurricanes, natural disasters, shootings in Las Vegas recently, all these things, is that Christians need to exercise mercy and compassion. We need to be Christ to the world, His hands and His feet, but not just hands and feet, not just in service. That's really important, but I think in heart as well. We need to have sympathy and not rush too quickly to the apologetic, to the philosophy, to the theology of all this, but to just be people who care and who serve and aren't so quick with the answers. I think eventually, though, people do ask the intellectual questions and want some answers, and then we can kind of dive into that.
Well, of course, one of the questions I know that you encounter from time to time, and I had a conversation with someone, wasn't that many months ago. Basically, it's, what about those who have never heard? Does God send them to hell?
Yeah. I think this gets back to whether or not we actually trust in God or we think we somehow know better. Sometimes us Christians or people who are seeking the faith, we think that God's judgments, God's mercy, God's character isn't just and that we somehow know better. We can compare God, the almighty creator of the universe, to some cultural standard or neighborhood standard that we have. And for Christians who are really committed to a biblical understanding of God, we go to the scripture and we go to Christian history and we see, well, who is this God that we serve? Can we trust in His love and His mercy and His justice? And of course, we see this demonstrated at the cross. His love and justice are fused together at the cross. And that's the God whose character we are trusting in. So when we ask the question, what of those who have never served, never heard the gospel, do they just go to hell? We don't know exactly what happens to them, but I think the first thing to say is that we need to look to who God really is and to have trust in Him. And as David Clark here at Bethel Seminary says in one of his books, God is doing things behind the scenes in their lives that we don't always know about. He might be sending dreams. He might be working on their hearts. He might be giving them revelation in ways that we don't know about. So we shouldn't be too quick to judge, I guess, what happens to them.
But it is an uncomfortable topic, isn't it? I mean, to try and get around that is like, well, to say I don't know feels somehow like we should have a better answer.
Yeah. Well, along those lines, Paul does say in Romans chapter 1 that the glories of God in nature are visible to everyone so that they are without excuse. So we shouldn't be too quick to just excuse people and say, oh, it's okay, they haven't heard the gospel, or they heard it once but not in a good way. And I think people are responsible for the amount of light that they've been given. And Paul indicates in Romans 1 that we've been given that light through the revelation of nature. And in Romans 2, he indicates we've been given that light through the obligations felt by our conscience, that God has placed the law, His law, on our hearts, and it affects our conscience, and we do have this sense of moral obligation and this yearn toward holiness, at least at our best moments. And Paul says that we need to pay attention to those, and that if we don't, if our hearts are hardened, then we are without excuse. So that's kind of the tension and the discomfort that you were just referencing.
You know, there's another question that often comes up, maybe an argument, is that, well, this is all just a matter of geography. I mean, isn't Christianity just a function of where we grew up? You know, if we were born in Saudi Arabia, we'd be Muslims instead. How do you respond to that one?
Yeah, well, that's possible. Had I been born in Iraq or wherever, maybe I would be a Muslim person. But that doesn't actually change the truth of Christ and Scripture. Christ and Scripture, or the truth of Christianity, is not a function of my belief. If Christianity is really true, then it doesn't matter where I grew up or what I believe. Christianity isn't true because I believe it or anyone else believes it. It's just true on its own merits. So at the end of the day, the question is whether or not Christianity is actually true, not whether I grew up in a Christian nation or grew up in a place that was mainly Islamic.
So how would we respond to, again, if we want to get off of that geography side to truth? I mean, are people willing to maybe make that transition or even consider that conversation?
Yeah. If we can first make the case that truth is not a function of belief, in other words, you can't make something true by believing it. If you can move from there to the question of, well, is Christianity true? And how might it compare to Islam? And the way that Christian philosophers and theologians have answered that question is that there's a kind of cumulative case to be made for Christianity. It's the preponderance of evidence. We become these kind of theological lawyers, and we make our case from origins and the design of the world. We make our case from the argument from morality. We make our case from the historic Jesus, the evidence for the Gospels. We make our case from experience. There's a whole variety of places that when you add them together, it's the cumulative effect of these arguments. And that's what a lawyer will do in a court of law. The lawyer will add together email records and motive and proximity and all these things. And on any one of those items, the judge or jury might say, yeah, so what? Lots of people were near this event. But when you add things together, it's the cumulative effect. It's the converging lines of evidence from a variety of sources that it becomes so convincing. And that's what we're trying to do with Christianity. If we're trying to show that it really is true, we bring together all these arguments together in kind of a giant puzzle. And when you add in all the pieces of the puzzle, that's when it becomes very compelling.
I know over the, you know, weeks that we've gotten together, we talk often about, you know, making the case, but you often use questions to help make the case. So it's not so much about sort of a preaching and teaching and, you know, here's the way it really is, but maybe just what would be some good questions for us to ask or help us to make the case without being dogmatic, perhaps?
Yeah. Well, with folks who are true skeptics, the first question I want to ask is how do they get on that journey? Mm-hmm. And that just tends to open up the dialogue in a more personal way, and then continue to ask questions about the specifics of that journey. A lot of times experience goes before unbelief. So a person doesn't become a skeptic just intellectually by looking at the raw data. They often have negative experiences with religion one way or another. And then along the way, I might ask the question, well, if it could be shown that it was really true, and let's say atheism or naturalism or whatever the person's belief is, if that were false, would that make a difference to you? So now you're getting at the question of their intellectual integrity. Are they really willing to make a change if something better were shown to be true, if something else were shown to be true? And that can be a very revealing question because it shows whether or not the person is just putting up an intellectual smokescreen or if they're really committed to following the data wherever it leads. And there's a famous philosopher of the 20th century, Antony Flew, and he was famous for always following the data wherever it led. And sure enough, late in life, somewhere around the year 2004, he actually came to believe in God. And he was this notorious atheist for decades. doing debates with the great philosophers of the world, but he had the integrity to follow the evidence where it led. But that simple question can be a turning point in a conversation. Are you willing to consider the evidence, and if it went the other way, would you go the other way?
I hope that's whet your appetite today to maybe to learn, to study more, to pray more for those friends, coworkers, neighbors that you know that you might have a spiritual conversation and get into a conversation about faith and discuss some of those big issues. You can find out more about Rick and his writings. He's author of Faith is Like Skydiving and Other Memorable Images for Dialogue with Seekers and Skeptics. He serves at Hamline University in Minnesota, but travels around the country at university campuses and colleges and does church seminars as well. And you can connect with him at rickmatsonoutreach.com. That's rickmatsonoutreach.com, talking today here on Connecting Faith. Now, Rick is a regular guest, and I look forward to having him back on again here sometime soon. Tomorrow, Leith Anderson is back with us. He is a regular contributor. We'll talk about issues of culture and the church. One of the issues certainly in our culture today is the issue of domestic violence, sexual assault. And Justin Holcomb is our guest tomorrow as we talk about domestic violence, sexual assault, and the church responding. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, so I hope that you'll join us tomorrow. And Ted, what a great conversation we had with Dave Carter.
Yeah, definitely.
He just gives us great practical wisdom and advice, Anatomy of an Affair. If you missed part of it, want to hear it again, pass it on to a friend. Invite you to go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. We get the interviews posted there. Myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith.